Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is the iOS Show, episode 211, recorded on May 30th, 2014. Enjoy! All right, it's time for the iOS Show, where we cover all things iOS and beyond. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me, as usual, is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. How you doing, Jeff?
I'm really confused. What show am I on?
It is the iOS Show, or TIOS, as I think.
TIOS. Welcome to TIOS. I like that.
Sounds futuristic.
It does.
Adam Christensen's also here from the MacCast. Hey, Adam. How you doing?
Hey, how you doing?
Good. We're here talking about iOS stuff, but I really don't want to talk about any iOS stuff. I just want to talk about the SpaceX thing from yesterday because it's so freaking cool. Did you guys see that?
The new Dragon 7?
Dragon 2.
Dragon 2. Oh, sorry. It holds 7 people.
Yes. Yeah, it's the crude version of the Dragon capsule from SpaceX. It looks like all of the futuristic drawings of things that would land on Mars. It can land propulsively, be reused, and has giant rockets and holds 7 people and has a sweet like Star Trek Next Generation cockpit thing. Remember the control panel that Data sat in front of? It could like swing away and he'd walk off.
Mm-hmm.
So this does that. The panels just kind of float up above you, and then you sit in your seat and you pull it down. It's like that, and they have leather seats too.
Swanky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so check that out. It's pretty cool. SpaceX.com. So we'll talk about iOS stuff, I guess, instead of space all the entire show.
Whatevs.
So Apple's going to be offering a live video stream of WWDC, which happens on Monday. Hooray.
So excited. Finally.
Yes.
Some real stuff to talk about.
Yeah, I know, right?
Well, that's the business we're in. I get it. It goes with the job, but mm-hmm. You know, it's nice when we have a bunch of things that are actually tangible that we can point to and say, "Wow, that's cool."
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the keynote. Not just because we'll finally have some stuff to talk about, but because I think it's actually going to be a pretty exciting event.
Yeah.
If not, get ready for the Apple is doomed stories.
Yeah. So what are you guys expecting?
I think we're really going to get something about this rumored home automation and smart home platform.
Okay. And so the idea is that they're going to be, it's been described as being similar to their made for iPhone platform. Initially, it seemed as though people were saying or speculating that it would integrate pretty well into the operating system, where you would kind of merge all the functionality of all these different devices from different vendors that may have different applications into one thing, where you could very easily, change the temperature on your Nest and then change the lighting on your Hue lights and maybe lock the front door and this and that all from one thing instead of bouncing between 3 and 4 apps.
I love that idea.
It would be awesome. However,
sounding that's like that may or may not be what it is. I'm hoping that's what it is. I'm hoping that the, made for I side of the story is just a component of the, hey, these things are going to be compatible with this system that we're building. But that may be a little more pie in the sky. And actually, I was saying on my own show, I believe it's probably more like the, hey, we're just going to certify that these devices and these things work with the iOS apps and they're going to be seamlessly integrated with the apps that exist. And the only reason I'm thinking that is because before this week, we heard nothing about this home automation thing.
Right, yeah.
And if Apple was really out talking about a entire platform with third-party companies, you would
something
have thought
would have leaked.
Yeah, you would have thought something would
well,
have leaked.
Well, something may have leaked. Something may not have leaked. I mean, you think about all the stuff that leaks. It's typically hardware leaks. We almost never hear about software leaks, and especially with something like this, where Apple does have a lot of control over it, because it would these meetings would be taking place in Cupertino, and they may only be working with just a few partners, and these partners have been in Apple stores, and you wouldn't think that they would want to jeopardize their ability to continue doing stuff like that.
Yeah, but the more people that you have out there, the harder it is to keep secret. And a lot of leaks come from outside of Apple. You know, when Apple starts letting word out into these other companies, and these companies are going to be they are making hardware that would integrate with the system. So there is a hardware element. I guess maybe they're not that far along to where any changes they'd have to make in their hardware specifications would be somewhere down in their supply chain, and maybe you're right. Maybe that's why it didn't leak out. But I think everybody wants that platform. I think it just shows that the excitement surrounding the leak to me shows how sort of messed up the whole system is, and how Apple's always looking for some place to do disruptive technology. And home automation could be really a place where they could do that, because I really see it in talking to people. There's kind of two sides of that whole system right now. And the one is the seamless, easy way to go is you hire one of these companies that specializes in it, and you spend tens of thousands of dollars on a full integrated system, and they come and spend a bunch of time in your house installing a bunch of stuff, and then they hand you some sort of custom tablet and go, here you go, everything's integrated and you can control everything from here, right? There's that side of it. And then there's the whole home hobbyist thing with like X10 or Insteon or all these different separate systems that are out there that you have to finagle with and tinker. You know, it's like the Linux of home automation, right? And you can get working, but it's like
way to describe
pulling
it.
Your hair out, you know, and it's good technology, you know, but it takes a certain level of skill and knowledge to cobble it together and get it working, right? It's not for mere mortals, and Apple is going to want a consumer-friendly product.
Right.
Going to be the company that can bring all of this together in a consumer-friendly package. They're really, really good at that. And so they could make it happen. So I think that's what a lot of people were responding to and excited about. So, you know, we may just be seeing the first steps of, you know, we're going to do this thing. We've got a lot more connected devices coming on board. Apple's been investing a lot in sensors and all kinds of different kinds of technology that would be perfect for this kind of application. So they seem primed to be able to do something like this, which is why I think everybody got so excited about it. But yeah. There was a little air let out when I think it was TechCrunch that was it. TechCrunch that followed up.
It was TechCrunch. They totally took the wind out of our sails.
I don't know if it was them as much as, you know, just I think we got all hyped up and then they brought everybody back to reality.
Yeah, that it's basically going to be a label that says this will work on your iPhone.
Right.
I hope it's more than that.
I do too. But you gotta think that. Apple has a long history of really primarily focusing on technologies in consumer, especially with consumer stuff where they're going to partner and integrate with consumer technology that isn't directly created by them in-house, of waiting until it makes sense to bring it because it's part or a little bit more mainstream. I don't think that the home automation stuff is mainstream enough necessarily for Apple to full on support something like this. Now I can understand the made for iPhone kind of thing happening right now, as you said, Adam, as your first step, and then gradually moving into the future, then adding those sorts of controls into iOS and integrating it and making it an easier process. But then again,
But I want Siri in my house.
I do too.
I want to walk in and be like, Siri, make me dinner.
Yeah, make me dinner, Siri.
I so want that. For now, I'll settle with Siri, turn down the lights.
Right,
or
yeah.
Siri, it's too warm in here.
Well, and you know, that brings up another conversation about what we may see in iOS as regards to Siri, because we've been clamoring for quite a while. What was it, iOS 6 that we got Siri, right? Or was it 5? Mm-hmm. Okay, so iOS 6, we were hoping iOS 7 is going to bring on some opened Siri APIs. And you got to think that iOS 8 is going to have some ability for developers to do something with
they don't have
the Siri.
If they don't have an open Siri API, I'm going to be floored. At this point, they've got to open it up.
What else are they going to do? You know,
it's got to be ready to be opened up.
I'm really hoping that's the case.
I mean, the rumored split screen multitasking thing.
Brian Chen says it's dead.
Yeah, he says it's not ready or never was ready or wasn't
not
happening.
Dead, yeah.
Or,
not ready. They're not going to show it off at WWDC.
Right. So what the hell are we going to see at WWDC on iOS 8?
Especially with the keynote that's blocked out for 2 hours.
Is that an extra long keynote?
Apple doesn't usually do 2 hours.
I think they usually do like an hour.
They've done 90 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it varies, you know, depending. But a two-hour one is definitely a substantial one. Some people think health book, but I think they're not going to show health book because I think if they showed health book, then they've got to say that they have an iWatch. And I don't think they're ready to do that.
Do they have to, though? I mean, they already have the M7 coprocessor, right?
Well, they could talk about how HealthBook integrates with the iPhone.
Yeah.
But still, that would feel a little anemic.
Yeah,
sure.
I think.
Right. Yeah.
That's a great way to describe it. Yeah, like a thin. It's just going to be like, okay, yeah, okay. Because really, what can your phone can't track to the extent that, health, you know, they'd be showing off like part of HealthBook, which
right.
I don't think they want to do. You want that to be right. An integrated, like big reveal thing together. I think those two things have to go, the hardware and the software on that one have to go together.
Okay, so how surprised are you guys going to be if they show off the watch? Are you going to be completely floored? Are you thinking there's 0%?
I will be totally floored if they show off the watch.
Oh, I've been giving it kind of, in my mind, it sort of stands a 50% chance.
I think so too.
See, I think the watch is a big enough thing that it will get its own media event.
Yeah, and I'm kind of with you there too.
But at the same time, so yeah, I agree with you on that. But at the same time, you got to think that Apple wants to provide developers with some method of doing something on the watch. But then again, it could be something where, you know, with the original iPhone, we saw that later on.
Super secret meetings and
sure.
Select partner sort of thing, like they usually do.
Right. What about Apple TV? Are we thinking better chance of Apple TV? Anything related to Apple TV at all?
I'm thinking if we get Apple TV stuff, it's software related, not new hardware.
Right. Yeah. WWDC is just not a hardware event for Apple. It's
right.
Just not what they do. So it would be a really special thing. That's why I only give the only piece of hardware I give a chance is the watch. And I'm only saying that because of my feeling like if they want to show off HealthBook, they've got to tip their hand on, and we're going to have a connected device that works with it.
Yeah. That's
I don't know how
I'm
deep
thinking.
They would go into it, but they'd at least have to say, and we're going to have some sort of hardware. And I just don't think they're going to want to do that. Like Jeff said, I think they want to keep that held for a whole separate event.
Yeah.
So I have no idea. I mean, iOS 8, no matter what, is for the most part, is an incremental update. We got the big update with iOS 7, you know, the big new UI change. So I don't think there's going to be a lot of whiz-bang features to show off with iOS 8.
Yeah, but then again, we are seeing, we're seeing a lot of OS 10 banners, but we're also seeing iOS 8 banners. So, I mean, it's definitely going to be a staple. And of course, it makes sense that we're going to hear something about it. But you got to think it's going to be more than just like, we've made it faster and cooler. And it's now it has a water background. Another
I think
water
Triple
10
is going to take the show.
Triple 10. Trip 10? OS
yep.
10.10? Mac OS 10, 10.10.
Yeah, three tens.
So 10 cubed.
Yeah, I went with 10 cubed, and then Pilot emailed me, and he's like, you should take on the Boeing 777 thing, which is, you know, Boeing 777. He's like, it should be Mac OS 10.
Or just
I kind of like that better.
Triple 10's easier to say.
Yeah. So, but we're expecting maybe a primarily 75% OS 10 and then a 25% sort of iOS show, right?
That's what I'm thinking, you know. Because I think we're going to see a lot of the UI stuff that Ive has been working on with OS 10,
mm-hmm.
right? We've now he's been doing that now for, when did he take over, a year ago?
Oh, yes, it was right before WWDC.
Yeah. So it's been under his watch for a year. And so I think, like we saw with iOS 7, you know, I don't think it's going to be a full, you know, take iOS 7 and put it on the desktop. It's going to be something different, but we're going to see a lot of that influence in the UI. And I'm looking at my Mac now, and I've actually been looking at it for a while. And there's lots of things that it's time to go, like the stoplight thing in the windows.
I kind of like the stoplight.
The embossing, all that is feeling really stale to me now. I mean, I like those things too, but it's time for a new treatment on that stuff.
Yeah, maybe.
Just the UI in OS X is old.
It is.
It just feels old.
Yeah, it's comfortable, but you're right. It's old. It's like my pajama pants. I know, shock. I actually have a pair of pants. They have holes in them, and I don't want to wear them out in public. And they really need to be replaced. It's time for something new.
So you think we're going to end up with?
But they're comfortable.
I think we're going to end up with a bunch of rectangular icons everywhere, and like
I have no clue.
Flat.
That's what it's kind of exciting to me about it is I don't know what you would do. I think we've seen little hints here and there, maybe with more of the things like the Reminders app and some of the calendar app changes and stuff like that. I think those give you some little clues, and those aren't radically different. You know, they still have that comfort level, and I think Apple's going to be very careful about that. But like specifically, like the Finder and Mail, like those things need a little. They need a
lot.
Paint. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm totally up for big changes with Triple 10.
Yeah, I think 3D icons go away. I think we're going to see more of that blueprint line style icon stuff that they're doing in iOS show its face.
I think maybe the iBooks icon is probably iBooks and the server and those sorts of icons are good indications of what we'll see. It'll probably be a circle motif. So we see that in iTunes, right? What else do we see? I guess iPhoto is kind of retaining its previous look. iMovie has got that crazy star, that 3D star thing. I don't know. Kind of feel like we'll end up with circles.
I think if you look at maybe like, I don't even know, even Pages. I'm trying to think what Pages looks like and Numbers and Keynote, the latest iWork refresh. I think it's still going to go further than that.
Mm. Do you think Ive even uses a Mac? Do you think he just hangs out on an iPad all the time?
Now, I think he's so far ahead of all of us. He has the Apple eye implant.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a processor that actually lets you turn your entire body into your Mac computer.
Okay.
Don't ask where the USB sticks go.
Okay, I won't. I don't think I should.
No.
Okay, so where should we move? We talked about smart home.
Are you just avoiding the elephant in the room?
Beats? No, we're talking about Beats right now.
Okay.
Let's talk about it. So Apple bought Beats for $3 billion. It's confirmed. They bought Jimmy Iovine and Dr. Dre.
2.6, really, right?
2.6, and then $400 million in shares, vested shares.
That vest over a period of time that has been not disclosed.
Right. And it's important, I think, that people remember the announcement is not the same thing as the completion of the sale. That's actually going to wrap up this fall. So if people are expecting to see Apple-branded Beats products next week, and if they're expecting to see super deep integration of Beats products and technology in Apple's offerings next week, they're going to be disappointed.
Crazy
because
talk.
We're not at that point yet, but we're getting close.
It was surprising that Iovine showed up at Recode with Eddie Q.
That was
not
interesting.
So quickly. I think the timing of Recode and the timing of WWDC determined when Apple was going to make the Beats announcement because even though the deal isn't done yet, the collaboration has already begun. And part of that I really think is having the Q and Iovine dream team out there all the time, and they're hitting the ground running.
Yeah, I think we're going to be surprised how quickly we do see Apple Beats products, though, too, because wasn't it, didn't they say they've been already transitioning the design to Apple's designers for a while now as well? Didn't the design company say, hey, we're passing this off, and we've actually been working on passing this off for a while now?
Yeah, they said something too. Like that, yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, of course, we're going to see stuff, and we may see the first fruits from that collaboration next week. But wait until the deal's done, and then I think you'll see Apple just run with this stuff.
So the breakdown for this purchase was $2.5 billion for Beats Electronics and $500 million for Beats Music.
Really?
Yeah. According to Wall Street Journal. But, okay, so what does that mean? Does that mean that Apple was super interested in the electronics division? They were super...
No.
No? So you think
no,
they
it just means the electronics division brings in...
It does. It brings
$1.4 billion in revenue, and it means Beats Music had 250,000 subscribers, so it's just how the two companies are valued in terms of the revenue, I'm sure, that they generate, would be my guess. I'm no expert in this field, but, I mean, just thinking logically, right, you pay more for the company that makes more.
That makes sense.
Yep.
And that says a lot about where Beats Music is in the market today. It's a very small player.
Yeah, but it's also, from everything I've heard, it's small, but among audio people, music people, it's
popular.
Yeah, well, not only popular, it seems to be very well respected.
That's what
compared to some of the other services.
Yeah.
You know, they talk about it very highly when you put it up against the Spotify's and the RDO's and things like that in terms of the quality of recommendations and content and stuff like that. I think the content's all pretty much the same, right? Because they all, I mean, it's all just, I don't know much about Beats, and I'm thinking about trying it now that they've extended the trial, and I have never even tried it. Have either of you guys used Beats Music?
I have not.
Yeah, I need to do that now so I can talk more informed about it, but correct me if I'm wrong, it does use the Spotify RDO model, like I get access to everything that's in the Beats Music catalog, right?
I believe so, yes.
That's how I understand it.
It's not like iTunes Radio or Pandora where it's just random stuff.
It does have those features. So it has quite a few different ways of accessing the music. So you can pull up any sort of album or artist and play that. And then it has a couple different ways of pulling up music recommendations, so you can say, I want to listen based on a genre, I want to listen based on an activity, or I think you can even look at specific curators, I don't know, Pitchfork and Rolling Stone and that sort of thing. And then you can also just see curated like highlights of what's going on in music right now. You can also do, and this one's interesting to me, is the they call it the sentence, where you can say I'm doing something, and you pick what you're doing, like I'm at a party or at a gym or in the car or poolside or whatever, and I feel like, and then you fill in the verb, and then you say with, so you say like my pets or my BFF or your mom or something. And then you say you want to listen to like what kind of genre, like dance or hip hop or indie or what have you. And then it makes a station for you. And it does a lot of other interesting curation-based stuff. It looks into your, it asks you some questions in order to figure out to begin determining a just for you sort of set of stations.
Now, imagine integrating that with Siri and a smart home system.
Yeah.
Siri, I'm having a party with my best friends at 6 o'clock tonight.
We need some killer dance music.
And we need killer dance music.
Mm-hmm.
And then Siri says, okay, Jeff, I'll take care of that. How long do you expect the party to go? Oh, I think we'll be done with the dance part by about 11, but then we'll want some kind of mellow stuff while we're all just hanging out, having drinks. Okay, Jeff, I'll schedule that too, and I'll run it till about 1 o'clock for you, because that's when your other parties tend to break up. Okay, thank you, Siri. And then you go about your business, and at 6 o'clock, the music just comes on, and it's handled. Oh my God, I so want this.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, and I was really confused by the whole Beats deal, but the more that has come out and been written about it, and the more that I learn about the company, philosophically and culturally, it starts to make more and more sense as a fit for Apple, both on the Beats electronic side and on the Beats music side, for all these reasons, right? Apple likes that sort of deep curation thing within their music. The other thing that was really interesting was reading the piece. I need to start writing this stuff down. I have it in my show notes for MacCast. But when it broke, talking about, where was I going with this? Talking about, I totally lost my train of thought. Sorry.
Well,
you need Instapaper, Adam.
Yeah.
I need a better brain. My brain's fried at the end of the week.
We all need better brains.
It's going to come back to me because I just had it on the tip of my tongue and I got distracted.
So do you think Apple's going to be rebranding and redesigning the electronics division, or are they still going to be sold as Beats?
I think really the Beats clear. Name will stay around.
Yeah, okay. I think they want the branding and the cachet behind that.
You would think
brand.
So. I mean, so I think it's interesting to say that before the Beats talk really came up, I didn't know a whole lot about Beats, other than it's by Dr. Dre, and I see a lot of people wearing the headphones. And I just kind of assumed, okay, it's something that people like, and it's, I don't know, it seems like it's probably a good brand. It is a popular brand, and I just kind of assumed there are probably some good headphones because they're. I think,
and that's exactly why it has the power that it has.
Right now, do you guys know if the studio, the Dre Studio headphones, were the first ones? I thought that was kind of the deal, that Dr. Dre did the really expensive studio headphones first.
I don't know.
Okay. I could be completely wrong on this.
I don't know the genesis of it, but I mean, that sounds right.
That's kind of where I got my idea of, okay, these are studio headphones by Dr. Dre, and you'd think Dr. Dre, being a producer, probably uses some good headphones, right? So, and then that's just how my opinion was on it. So they're certainly good at branding, especially considering the fact that everybody says the headphones sound like crap.
Well, I don't know that everybody says that. And it's funny because I went by the Apple store today and they have the ones that they just updated, the Beats, the lower end ones that are in colors.
The Solo 2?
Solo, yeah. So they had the Beats Solos. They don't have the Solo 2s there at the Apple store.
Okay.
And so I thought I'll listen to these versus the Bang Olufsen's or Bauer Wilkins was the other brand that they had out there. I'm not a big fan of Bose, so they had Bose out there. I know certain people like Bose and the Bose sound. So I just went kind of down the line and started listening to different ones. And what I came away with the Beats ones, and this makes a lot of sense just, again, culturally for the brand, is they were very bassy and kind of did not provide a lot of dynamic range. So the sound quality, as near as I can tell, was as good as any of the other phones in terms of clarity and things like that. But what was missing was any kind of, you know, it was just very tuned toward the low end.
Sure. It wasn't as balanced. You know,
right. And it's sort of, in my mind, it's sort of like inkjet printers, you know, or your HDTV that comes out of the box tuned. So all the brightness is turned up. There's a certain sound that a majority of the public seems to like. And it's right. That overly bassy, deep, you know, not a lot of nuance in the sound sort of thing. So people will say these are great headphones and really like them because they don't know what they're listening for. And I'm not even an audiophile, but if you start to do the comparison, you can hear it. But I can tell you, when I put them on and listen to them, like, these sound pretty good to me, just in first listen, because that's sort of what we're tuned to.
Yeah.
You know, that bass resonant, you know, a little bit of reverb kind of sound is a really good sound. It's a happy sound to our ears.
Yeah, and that's really what I was thinking the more I considered this deal. It's a lot like all of the displays that Apple has now. They're all glossy displays, and people who are designers and photographers who do editing and color work and that sort of thing on a computer say that's not what you want.
Yeah, they'll say that's
crap. It's what people think look good. And at the same time, mm-hmm. that's kind of what Beats has going for them. Now, while I do appreciate a good low end, and I feel like I'm missing something from music when I don't get that. And I think I have a couple different pairs of headphones that I think my in-ear headphones, the Bluetooth ones that I use, the JF3s, those are nice for low end. But when I put on my my other pair, they're over-the-ear headphones, I don't get as much low end, although it's not bad. But I think I have another pair of in-ears that I'm thinking of that just are kind of lacking. They're the more... They're the headphones where you really want to get them deep into your ear to really get mm-hmm. a lot of sound response, but that hurts my ear. So, yeah, I mean, I am attracted to the lower end, but at the same time, you really do, I feel, you need that dynamic range of, yes, you're getting some nice low end, but you also need to hear what's going on in the other parts of the spectrum.
Yeah, but again, you take them standalone. Like I'm saying, it was the first pair that I picked up and just put them on. And had I not listened to anything else, I would not have known what I was missing, and I would have been perfectly happy probably with those headphones.
Yeah, yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely.
Like, I would have thought, hey, these sound great without any kind of reference for comparison, and most people don't. And most people, you know, branding-wise, Beats are super popular and they're hip with the kids and the music industry and the folks in Hollywood. And I want to be like those people. So I can get a nice sounding set of headphones. I can pay too much for them, but hey, I look cool walking down the street.
And that's you know, the interesting that's not, thing is how
hey,
expensive
that's not
they are.
A bad, that's not necessarily, a lot of people see
that's
that
not
as a negative,
bad
but
thing.
It's not a bad thing. No, it's just, it's life.
Yeah. It's just not my thing. Yeah. I actually use different headphones depending on what I'm doing. Like right now I'm using Westone's UM2 in-ear monitors, and that's what I use for all of my podcasting, because that gives a very realistic reproduction of audio overall. But they're not great for music.
Mm.
And so what I actually use for that, I forgot which model they are, but it's from Audiofly, which is a company a lot of people haven't heard of. And holy crap, are those fracking awesome. Just incredible for music and TV shows and movies.
Yeah. I remembered what I was trying to talk about earlier. We want to go back there.
Yeah.
So it was Apple. The reason why Apple didn't build their own headphone business and streaming music service, because a lot of people were going, why would you pay $3 billion when you could take that money and you could ground up build your own companies for that, right? And Apple fully could. And Tim Cook made a comment, I think it was an interview with Recode where this came out, and you know, he talked about basically buying the talent, getting that head start. But another angle on this thing was apparently there's some concern at Apple over cratering the music business because of album sales and song sales. iTunes accounts for something like 63% of industry revenue in that area. And so if suddenly everybody just transitions from iTunes to Apple's streaming service, it would have a huge negative impact on the revenue of the music industry and artists.
I can see that.
See, that theory I find to be really fascinating.
Yeah.
And if true, that means that Apple is looking at the seriously long-term perspective on the music industry.
And they totally are.
Yeah, and they're, in a sense, making an altruistic move to help preserve the industry as we transition from one medium to another for our music listening preferences.
Right. And the other thing that I think is really cool that a lot of people aren't thinking about is Apple's positioning themselves to kind of cover all the bases too, because you're always going to have certain consumers that only want to buy and own music. You're always going to have certain consumers that just want to do the whole radio thing. So right now they now have their foot in every aspect of the game, right? Or they're playing in every aspect of the game. They've got a pretty good radio streaming service, despite what people want to say. It's like we've talked about this on the show. It's like the number three in terms of subscribers with iTunes Radio. iTunes, we know, just give them that. They own purchased music, and now they've got this Beats music service that they can build upon and build up. And as customers who are showing that they have a tendency, we're seeing iTunes sales declines. So we're seeing this tendency or this trend that people are moving over to these streaming services. So Apple can move them over, but they'll be able to keep iTunes around and integrate and do sell-through. And they're going to be able to do cross-promotion with the radio stuff so they can get radio people into the streaming service and into buying iTunes albums. So all of these things, I think, are going to exist in the long term. And I think Apple recognizes that as well. And you look at a lot of the competitors, and they're just in one of these spaces. So Apple's better primed to kind of take on the industry as a whole. And I do like this aspect or this thought that they're also working to kind of protect it and make sure that it makes the transition along with them. Because if the music industry can't make the transition and technology does, well, then the whole system falls apart anyway.
But you got to wonder if it is that fragile that if Apple just simply introduced their streaming music service, it would crater the whole industry. I mean, how much power do they have over keeping that from happening, even if they do it over a more subtle period?
It's the revenue. It's figuring out the revenue models and figuring out how to get artists paid more for the streaming services than they are now, to supplement the loss from single album sales and single track sales that they've enjoyed.
Yeah. Maybe, I think that they've probably gotten a lot of interesting data from iTunes Radio. And I think that maybe part of what they will gain from the Beats acquisition is data, past data and continuing data about how people listen to music, what they listen to, what their habits are, and figure out a way to maximize the actual money that goes back to the artist and to the industry based on how the listening patterns actually work in these subscription services. Because you can't expect someone to pay $40 a month or more for one of these services. But if you understand how people are listening to it, you can offer it at the service at a reasonable price, and at the same time pass along the money in a fair way to the artists, assuming that the listening patterns work out that way. And I think that they probably will, because people don't listen to a completely different song every time they listen to a song. Right. Yep. They listen to stuff over and over again. They hang on one or two albums or one or two sets of songs, this or that. And the better that's understood, the better they can translate that to getting money to the artists and keeping the industry going and transitioning to this sort of thing. And at the same time, we'll still see purchases going on. It'll just be moving more toward, we'll have a greater mix of streaming.
Yeah, the other thing they're dealing with too, though, is a music industry where big name artists are getting less and less in terms of sheer numbers. So, meaning that you have a few big name artists that are going to be with the labels, but more and more you're having self-published musicians and artists who also have, not in terms of the big labels' successful careers, but in terms of self-publishing and making a living, are making careers for themselves without a label in place. So there's an underlying industry change that they have to deal with in terms of how they're going to work out deals, how they're going to work out revenue streams and things like that, with more money going direct to the artist rather than funneling through a label. You're still going to have the labels, but it's the dynamic has changed. The labels are not taking on some of the, you know, they're requiring big numbers from their artists to kind of stay on the label.
Yeah.
You know, there's like a gap that's being formed, right? It's like you have to sell this much to be a label artist, and everybody else is going to have to figure out some other way.
Yeah, and depending on how Apple figures this stuff out, you may be an artist that would benefit even better with one of these streaming services if you're not with a label because you don't have your middleman there.
Right.
Depending on how Apple figures out the revenue sharing thing. So speaking of which, Amazon seems to be getting ready to do their own streaming music service. And that's from BuzzFeed. The interesting thing about it, though, is so it'll be part of the Prime service, which is neat. It's interesting that Amazon is bundling all of these services together in an interesting move to poach customers from Netflix and now streaming music services, because a lot of people already have Prime. And if you're like me, you're sitting there thinking, I have a Netflix streaming subscription, but I also have Prime. I don't really need Netflix. Of course, Netflix has a lot of stuff that they do in-house. But I already have Prime, and I really like Prime. If I get rid of Netflix, I can still grab shows and movies to an extent when I want them from Amazon. Same deal goes for music. However, the new music service, according to BuzzFeed, will not have brand new music. It will be, I think they said new-ish. So only offering songs six months.
They're gonna kind of select. It sounds like they're gonna select which songs so they don't have to pay all the licensing for all the music. They're gonna try and save a little bit of money and just kind of pick the. It's gonna be like
6 months or
Amazon over. Prime Top 40.
Right, except not top 40, because if it's new, then they won't have it yet.
True. Yeah, Prime's an interesting thing. Do you really like Prime movies better than Netflix?
Oh, hell no.
I was just actually literally thinking about this last night, because I have both. I have access to Prime and I have access to Netflix, and they pretty much have exactly the same content, but the whole Prime experience on any of my devices or my connected things is so lame.
Oh, yeah.
That I much prefer to use Netflix. Like, I will not, even though I have Prime and I could get the same content, I'm not giving up my Netflix because I like their app and their whole experience way better.
It is a better experience.
That's good to know.
It is. I mean, the Amazon Prime movie experience is so crappy compared to Netflix. I loved Netflix, and sure, there's some degree of me being used to how Netflix works, and there are certainly issues with the way Netflix works. However, it's not nearly as nice. For example, there's no autoplay. So if you're watching a television series, then you're going to have to go back, find the next episode, click on it, reload the page, hit play and go. It's a little bit better on devices. However, you still have to select the next thing. Yeah. Searching for stuff is not as good. And especially the fact that I think that because Amazon offers things for sale really sullies the overall experience, because if you search for something, you're going to find it most likely.
You're going to find it, yeah, because they have it.
But you're going to think, okay, I get to stream this, and you're going to press on it, and you're going to say, where's the play button? How do I play this?
Video account.
Yeah, and it says, you can watch this if you want, no big, but you have to press this button up here. That it's just really tough to figure out, and you don't want to buy it in the first place. So you actually have to go to I believe you have to go out of the application. You have to go to actual Amazon Online
that's
store.
That's Apple's fault.
Apple's fault.
Blame there.
But at the same time, it's just not, I mean, Amazon isn't a company that is solely focused on this experience, right? They're focused on primarily on the shopping experience.
Selling you stuff. Yeah.
Of course, it can improve over time, but right now my experience with it is not super great. But at the same time, I'm trying to save some money and not waste a bunch of time watching Netflix. It's a nice little go-between.
Yeah. I mean, Amazon's whole model is upselling you on stuff. I mean, that's why the Fires are cheap. That's why the whole experience is designed to get you to buy more stuff on Amazon. And that's why they're taking this music thing and they're rolling into Prime, because the more Prime subscriptions they sell, and the less of those, they don't really care about those services, right? Because it's a bunch of hooks to get you to buy the Prime service. Say, look at all this stuff you get with Prime. And you go, yeah, but I really only am going to use the free shipping. And that's fine. I'm perfectly happy to pay that. And so everything's just kind of extra, right?
Yeah.
So whatever hooks they have, if you're a music person, you're going to go, oh, this is cool. I get all my music stuff. If you're a movies person, you're like, oh, good. I get the movies. You know, whatever your hook is, it's a bunch of hooks to get you in there. And they make a lot of money business model. Stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they can upsell you. Then they have a marketing opportunity. They've got you at all different points to sell you something else.
Yeah. And they're doing so a heck of a job with it.
The Google, it's the whole Google Ads thing. You know, like Google has all this great technology that's free, but I always feel dirty using it because I know they're just using me. But I like it anyway.
You like right? it anyway. Yeah.
It sucks. It's a really icky relationship.
It's a dysfunctional relationship.
Yeah, why I like Apple so much better. You know, because they're not doing that to me. They're like, no, you pay us and then we'll let you use this thing. It's really straight, cut and dry. You know, iTunes Radio is $25 a year. If you want iTunes Match, it's $25 a year. Just pay us. If you want your iTunes, just buy it. If you want your movie, here's the price. And we'll let you watch it and let you be.
You know, that is interesting that you bring that up, because I think that Apple is definitely on the forefront of the you get what you pay for kind of mm-hmm. methodology. And I feel like that's kind of where the industry is headed. And that's, I think not.
I think it's completely the opposite.
That's where people want it to go, right? You want to have a little bit more honesty with what you're getting, especially in the TV sector, right? Because you're paying for this monolithic cable bill and you watch 5% of it.
Right.
What you really just want to watch is like Game of Thrones and 30 Rock. I know 30 Rock is not anymore, but you know what I mean? You just yes, want to watch a few totally different things, and that's what people I feel really want. It's a more honest feeling to what's going on, and at the same time, it even works out with subscription services, because you say, I just want to pay you this amount of money a month. And I want to be able to pull up any music that I want. I'll keep paying you money every single month, but I want to find any piece of music that I want right away at a moment's notice, regardless of if I have downloaded it or any of that. I just want to press a button, have some music, and I also want to have some nice stuff that introduces me to new music, this and that. It's an interesting dichotomy between Apple and what Apple is doing and what Amazon is doing with these sorts of services.
I guarantee you, with Amazon, with the music service, is going to be the same thing as they have with the music with the movie service. You'll be able to search for any piece of music you want, and it will pop up in their interface. But you'll say, "Hey, yeah, here it is," and you'll say, "I want to stream that," and they'll go, "Well, that one's not available on streaming, but you can buy it."
Yeah, you can get it on vinyl.
Put it in your account.
You can get it on vinyl. We'll send it to you. You can rip it later.
And that totally fits Amazon's business model.
Yeah.
I think the bottom line for a lot of people is that what they want is cheap for pricing.
Yeah.
And
I think they want fair. Yeah. Fair to them.
I think a lot of people want cheap.
They just want cheap or free. I mean, it's the main reason why I hate the App Store model. I hate the new app world order in terms of selling software.
Yep.
It's gone down what I would call the Amazon Google route. It's like, you can have all this stuff for free, but it's really not free because we're going to throw a bunch of ads at you or an app purchases, or we're going to cripple it at some point, or, you know, because we got to make our money some way. And I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it.
Do you think, so I still believe that if we had the ability to, developers to have the ability to offer apps as a trial.
Yes.
I think that would really solve it. I think it would really,
if they had those two things, we would see more developers selling software rather than going down the nickel and dime road. And I get it. I'm not faulting the developers. And it's consumer demand, and it's what they have available to make a living. You know,
they're working within the parameters that have been forced upon them.
Yeah.
Now,
there of course are those developers that are just they love the model and right, you know, pure yeah. greed and stuff like that. But I'm talking about, you know, a lot of developers who have sold software the old way and developed the old way, and they're moving to the, into this new marketplace that Apple's created, and they've got to stay within the sandbox, and this is how you make money within the sandbox that Apple, you know, built and threw everybody into.
Yeah, and it's clear when you look at developers like Omni Group and Agile and all of them who sell their software on the App Store alongside selling software on their own website. And that's because the selling it on their website affords them more opportunities to reach customers and make money, which is how they exist in the first place. They need to make money.
That's going away. Well, you know, but God bless them, because there are some of the few companies that have stuck with the, hey, look, this is the price, buy it. And when the new version comes out, we'll have a new version. You're going to have to rebuy it. Is now how they have to do it. They can't do the upgrade thing as much anymore.
And it totally sucks. Now, if Apple is truly interested in altruistically making sure the music industry continues to thrive, they better be also considering the software industry.
Oh my God, yes. And they totally blown it there.
Well, yeah. They really need to come out with, as we've said, they need to have that. I hope they have it in iOS 8. If they introduce that at WWDC, that would be so great for the industry. But I don't know. I
don't think they will either, unfortunately.
Yeah, and the reason that I think they won't isn't because they're looking at the whole thing going, I don't get it. Why would people want that? They're looking at it as, this is the new business model that we think everyone needs to use going forward.
But they must
therefore,
think it's sustainable.
This is all we will offer you.
Very sustainable for them, because they get 30% of everything regardless.
No, it's not long-term sustainable, though.
Not if the developers all tank.
Right. And I think that the pricing structures need to change.
Absolutely.
To support this new model that Apple is pushing on developers. So the base price for an application needs to go up some so that it's higher than with the current entry-level prices. Mm-hmm. But then that brings down the price for every time you have to buy a new version.
Yeah.
And so then an app that might have been like $1.99, maybe it's a $5 app. And then that way, or well, I guess a better example would be maybe it's an app that otherwise would have cost $30, but now it's $15. And so it's a constant $15 across the board. But that's because you don't get an upgrade price.
But you got to think.
There's some sort of stasis that needs to happen.
Yeah, well, Apple would make more money. They stand to make more money if they provide ability for upgrade pricing, because people will. I mean, you don't know when there's a new app. So when a developer like we had with Tweetbot and 1Password and all those apps, when they want to make more money on a new version of the app, and they're certainly entitled to doing so because it costs them money to do it, then you don't even know that it exists. So sure, you can put in a push notification that says, hey, there's a new version of Tweetbot, but that sucks. And a lot of people don't see it. And you have to wait and hear about it from your friends. And eventually you'll get around to it. And some people just don't get around to it. But if you have a thing within the app that says, hey, we have a new version, you can upgrade to it, or even in the App Store it says, hey, this is a paid upgrade, would you like to do it? That would be great. Apple stands to make more money that way.
Yeah,
Apple also stands to make more money.
If the model is more correct, and I think really where that comes into play and where it's probably moving to in the next 3 to 5 years is the for a lot of developers, I think Apple's ultimate solution is going to be subscription. So it's going to be, you pay $5 a year to have this app, and we'll keep updating it. But every year you want to use it, you keep paying $5.
No, I don't like that.
I don't like that idea. And I've talked about this on my show, but I think that's the direction that we're heading in, because that solves both problems. That gives people that lower price point to entry and allows developers to continue to develop and update and have a constant revenue stream that can sustain them.
I think it's crazy, and I think people are friggin' nuts.
But why is it any different?
If people think that they can not pay any money for a thing, then it's insane. It doesn't translate to the real world. When we're talking about bits, people have this weird conception that it doesn't cost anything, and it's completely unsustainable. If people thought that it shouldn't cost them it more than $15 to buy a car, that would be nuts. But this is the kind of thing that we're talking about here with bits. And if we're talking about subscription services for something that doesn't, I mean, if it doesn't...
You realize I'm talking about per app, right?
No, I get that. I totally get that. But subscription services just, that doesn't work either. I think that we
it's
already
have... It's working for Adobe and it's working for Microsoft.
Is it really?
I think quite well.
Yep. Is it?
Yeah, it is.
I bought both.
Really? Because I hate the idea.
But I need those things.
Well, I just stay on the old versions. Why does it matter? I don't.
Well, eventually it will. But we're in that transition phase where right now, for a lot of people, it doesn't matter. You can stick with your traditional perpetual license for now.
But it's only going to last a couple years.
But you're saying that it is working simply on the basis of them forcing people into it.
Yeah, and that's what I think is going to happen on the App Store. If they want to sustain developers and they want to sustain the model, if they're not willing to bring back the trial and the upgrade stuff, I think that's how this is one way that you solve that problem, and one that actually makes a lot of sense from a purely business standpoint. Looking at it as a business way, and more people are becoming very comfortable with the idea of subscriptions. We've got tons of them. We've got Netflix. We've got Amazon Prime. We've just talked about a bunch of them. So why doesn't this also apply to software? And I hate the idea because now I've got to freaking remember all these different subscriptions that I'm paying into, and where is this one, and do I still use it, and do I still have it, and it's auto-renewing. And what's great for on the business side is people forget about these things, right? And they just sort of go on autopilot.
Well, you know, maybe it's I'm thinking about it again, and you know, you can look at riding the bus as a good example of how this kind of works out. So instead of buying a car where you're paying $20,000 for something, and it's yours and you keep it forever and you can do whatever you want with it and you can drive around and this and that, you can look at someone who rides the bus instead, or who rents a house, these sorts of things. The thing that bothers me about it in general, though, is that I don't think that there is one universal system that will work out for every type of product or service. I mean, you don't go to the grocery store and demand a subscription for the
groceries. For your bananas.
Yeah, for your bananas. Banana subscription.
But why not?
Actually, I kind of like that.
Maybe you could, and except it would work a little bit different. You pay $5 a week for your bananas, but you get as many bananas as you want.
Yeah,
I subscribe to my razors now, right?
Yeah, that's true. But then again, every once in a while, you might be interested, like, oh, I wonder if these bananas are good. I wonder if this item of food is good. And I don't know what's going on outside my
house. Just change subscriptions
right
then.
I guess.
Subscribe to the new bananas.
Well, no, you don't want to change your subscription. Maybe you don't eat bananas. Maybe you just need to get a clove of garlic or something like that.
Okay,
you don't
so you
want to subscribe
produce.
To
okay,
groceries.
This is degraded. We're not going to have subscription groceries anyway. This is stupid.
Okay. Fine.
I thought we had
ultimately,
just
I think that we just need, I think that both my ultimate plan or my ultimate
desire.
Not desire. What I'm trying to say is I don't think there's one size fits all. I don't think one model will work for everything, and I don't think it will work for every person. So I think that Apple should diversify the way that they offer applications. Mm. I think that both options should be there. And I don't know why we got into talking about subscription apps, but it was an interesting discussion.
It was very interesting.
Okay, let's run through. We got a couple more things.
Subscription music and Amazon and it. Yeah, it was an interesting trail, but let's get back on the road.
Yeah, okay, so we'll blast through a few more things here. Eddie Q was at Recode, and he was with Jimmy Iovine. As we said before, one of the most interesting things that he had to say there, Eddie Q, that is that, quote, later this year, we've got the best product pipeline that I've seen in my 25 years at Apple. And that's interesting, especially considering the fact that Apple has announced zero things today or to date.
Which means
this year.
They have a pretty impressive second half of the year coming up.
We better hope so.
It's going to be Barfapalooza.
Yeah.
Is that what we call when Apple does a bunch of different events?
I call it Apple barfing out all their products at once.
Okay, Barfapalooza. And yeah, I think it's interesting.
It's like when you gorge, they're like gorging internally and they're just like growing. It's like, what's that meaning of life? Or Life of Brian?
Oh, Mr. Creosote.
Yeah,
Creosote. Mr. Creosote.
Get me a bucket, I'm going to throw up.
And then it just explodes. Yeah. One more. It's a thin mint.
Yeah, wafer thin mint. Wafer thin. So that was interesting. And he also talked about TV. He said it's a complicated problem, blah, 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 as we've heard before. And we've also heard that he doesn't want to work with the cable companies.
Yeah, well, he's got Jimmy now.
Yeah, let Jimmy do it.
There you go.
That's what he's there for. He's got the personality and the connections, and things are going to get moving. I think it's great because it frees up Eddie to do the stuff that he does best in terms of, you know, managing those businesses and internally at Apple. And now he can have a really good outside person meeting with all those people and doing those deals in both. And I think Dr. Dre is going to have a capacity for that as well. So.
Yeah, especially in the music industry. And I don't think we actually mentioned it, but so part of the deal for Beats is that Dre and Iovine will be serving directly under Eddie Q.
So, and they're opening up a medical dispensary on the new Spaceship campus.
Yeah, I was going to say, what impact does this deal have on Dre's Detox album, because I've been waiting for that for a long time, and I don't know if Apple's going to be cool with him doing that anymore. But then again, he's got a reputation to uphold, so maybe there's some kind
of... No, they said he's going to be continuing to produce music and do all that stuff.
Excitedly talking about smoking marijuana?
Yep.
Okay, that's probably in the contract, I would guess. Is not squelching his pot.
If Apple's smart, they don't make him change, don't try and force him to change one thing.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure
that because that changes the whole image thing. Yeah,
yeah.
Right. And it's not like they drug tested Apple anyway. As far as I know, Dre would not pass that test.
There's probably a lot of people that wouldn't pass that test.
Well, that's the argument that was given to me when I asked about that, and it makes a lot of sense. California for you. What else do we have here? iCloud hack. That was interesting. And I think
it's not really an iCloud hack.
Okay, so it was a dumb people hack.
There you go.
Okay, so a bunch of people, and it seemed like it was primarily happening in Australia.
Yeah, I saw one report that said it had spilled over to the US, but I think I only saw it one place.
So yeah, people's devices were being ransomed. iPhones, computers... Well, iPhones and Macs, I should say, iPads, all that kind of stuff.
Ransom with an account you couldn't pay anything to.
Yeah, the PayPal account doesn't exist, right? But you got to go find Oleg Pliss.
It turns out is an actual programmer. So
good.
Poor Oleg. People are poor screwing Oleg. Him over because.
Oh, and it wasn't really him.
It wasn't
Somebody
him.
Just used his name.
Oh, yeah. Good. That's nice.
Poor Oleg. If you know Oleg, give him a hug and tell him you feel bad for him.
But so Apple came out and said basically it was people's accounts getting logged into. So they were hacked somewhere else, or the people were hacked and had their account credentials stolen, and then they used them on iCloud.
Yeah. Right? There was some speculation that it had to do with... What were the exploits recently? The accounts that were
like
stolen?
The eBay stuff, eBay, the Adobe stuff,
eBay and Adobe. Yeah, so people probably using the same password for multiple accounts. And you know what? Whenever a story comes out like this, whenever a story comes out like this, I sit back in my chair and I look up slightly and I think, man, I'm glad I used 1Password. And I go and I change my passwords. Because it's fun and I can do it and it's really easy because I already have different passwords.
I just changed my iCloud password just because after this story came out.
Same here. So use 1Password. I like it. They gave me a copy of it. I really appreciate them doing that because it affords me the opportunity to have really used it in depth, and I've come to enjoy the experience. There are certainly bumps in the road with something like this. Of course, there are bumps, and there's a little bit of friction, you know. But it works great, and it makes me happy to know that I don't have to worry about if an account gets hacked. What am I going to do about the rest of my accounts? Because it's not a big deal.
Right. Here's another thing. Two-factor.
Yeah. There you go. Well, you know, the two-factor thing, I'll probably get into it, but...
Any account that'll allow me two-factor, I do two-factor.
Well, I'll tell you this. My mom, she goes to college, mm-hmm. and I was helping her a couple weeks ago with something. I think she was having issues with Final Cut, and she's there for movie production, and... typically, I mean, because she's in Illinois, I'm in California, we do remote screen sharing. And I have her hop onto messages and log into her Gmail account so I can do the screen sharing thing with her. And every time it seems like it's pulling teeth because she doesn't hit the little remember my password box. And I thought that's what was going on again. Well, it had turned out after about 10 minutes of trying to get this thing to work... She said, well, maybe it has to do with my two-factor thing. And I'm like, you turned on two-factor authentication? She goes, yeah. And I said, did some kid just tell you to do that? She's like, yeah. Some kid told me it's better to do that. And I said, okay, either turn it off or learn how to do it. And we need to figure out how to do it because it's one of those things that I can only take so much friction in my life, I guess is what I'm saying. And that's why I haven't had a password on my phone and my iPad for the longest time. And actually, I now have passcodes on my iPhone and my iPad.
Oh, darn.
What's that? Why, you're going to grab my phone?
Yeah, I was going to mess with your phone next week.
Okay. Yeah, I was also going to say
like
that.
Chinese or something like that.
Yeah, Dvorak.
That would be right awesome. Before I left.
Yeah, that'd be nice. Well, the thing about it is I have it on the longest delay possible. I think it's like 6 hours and it asks a password because the only real reason I have it on is so I can jump in to find my iPhone and find my friends without having to type in my password. but at the same time I can do a remote lock if I want and it locks it right away. So, but I'll be changing the delay period before you come over.
Well, that's unfortunate.
And I guess it's interesting to mention that Apple is reportedly asking Chinese authorities to help them crack down on iPhone 6 leaks, which is kind of comical to me because what the heck are they going to do? But I guess they hired 200...
They're going to walk into factories and they're going to say, hey, you guys, knock it off.
Come on, seriously, guys.
Yeah. And who knows? It may actually work.
Yeah, we'll see.
I guess if you walk in with a really big gun and say, hey, you guys, knock it off.
Actually, if the Chinese government gets involved, that could be pretty scary if you're a factory worker leaking
That's true.
Stuff. Like, you might just go missing.
Yeah, yeah. Go swimming with the fishes.
Yeah.
Or whatever they do. So, yeah, that's that. I don't think we have anything else to talk about except for our picks, right? Nothing else? Nothing else pressing? No?
No.
Okay. All right. So, Adam, I'll let you go first.
Of course you will, because I have no idea what I'm going to pick.
Okay, Adam, I'd rather go first. Would you mind waiting?
First, so that
I could go first?
That'd be great.
Okay.
Awesome.
Happy
All right.
To
my pick comes as a surprise to me, because I didn't expect this to actually make me happy. But it's Swarm, which is the location app that's spun off from Foursquare.
Interesting.
I'm really liking it. I'm preferring that to using the Foursquare app. It seems that it's much more accurate at figuring out my exact location, which for me is really cool because there's like the grocery store and the coffee shop and the Chinese restaurant that they're all right there in a little cluster. And before, it would just guess and typically guess wrong as to which place I was at. But now it's like much more accurate. And it's a lot easier to see for me what the other people that I'm following are doing. I'm liking the interface, and I'm liking that I have the subset of Foursquare features that I really use all in one place, and the other stuff is out of the way. I even went so far as to take the Foursquare app and toss it off in a folder for now, and put the Swarm app on my home screen in its place.
Okay,
no
so
kidding.
Now, you can't be mayor of a place and you're the end-all, be-all mayor. You're just mayor within your friends, right?
Yeah, and that doesn't matter if you're using the Foursquare app or the Swarm app. They changed how the mayorships work.
Oh, so they've changed it regardless of the app now.
Yeah, that's an across-the-board change.
I don't like that. I'm hearing someone's water running or something.
What you're hearing is a massive rainstorm that just moved in.
Oh, cool.
Like, it's raining crazy hard.
That's cool.
Yeah, just had the windows washed yesterday. No kidding.
Oh, no.
Nice.
Yep.
Yeah, and sorry about the rain sound. And
it's pleasant.
It's soothing, yeah.
Okay, well, then you're welcome.
It's a good come down from the show.
Yeah.
You're ready? Because I can go if you want.
Because I was supposed to do my anti-pick.
Oh, yeah, people like the idea of anti-picks.
So. Automatic.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, give it to me.
That's the car add-on thing?
Yeah, it's the little car dongle that you plug into your car computer. I don't know. I'm going to say it may not be a fair anti-pick because I don't know what I was expecting from it.
Okay, you just bought
it. But I guess more would be the answer. I mean, it's a cool thing. You plug it in. It's a little hardware dongle. You plug it into that standard port that they, you know, if you go in for service, they're going to plug the computer in. There's a little port that's usually under the dash or few select locations in the cars, and I think they've been in there since my car's a 2001, so I want to say 96 models
something
and later
like that,
typically have it, something like that.
Yeah, the OBD2
port. And connects via what'd you say?
OBD2.
Yeah, you plug it in and it connects via Bluetooth to a little app, and then it monitors your driving behavior, and it will alert you and warn you if you stop too quickly or you accelerate too quickly. Also, you can set, here's first problem. So also, if you go over a set speed, right, and it's 70 miles an hour, and that's just hard-coded into the app, you can't adjust it, you can't change it. So if you're on a freeway and the speed limit is 75, which it is on the I-5 in some sections here, guess what? You're over. But I think it's the whole idea behind it, I guess, is to get you better gas mileage.
Right, yeah.
Right. So if you take it at face value, then, you know, how they've determined that, I have no idea. But it sort of tracks all of your driving. But I just haven't been overall happy with the user interface. I was also hoping it could maybe help me track things, like since it's tracking my driving with GPS and stuff like that, that there'd be some sort of way to maybe track my mileage. That's not built in, although they are working on it. So it seems like it could be a cool product, but it seems like it's not quite finished, I guess, is where I'm at with it. It's just a little too limited for the price. It's $100 for the little dongle, like $99.95, and it just doesn't seem to do all that much. It will also alert you if you have engine problems and, you know, your engine light, check engine light comes on. It will tell you what the codes are and what those codes mean and things like that. So I guess it would have some utility there, but I mean, that only becomes useful when you're having a problem with your car, and hopefully you're not having problems with your car all the time. I haven't had that trip or come on, you know, once yet. So I'm sure that'll be useful when it happens. But it seems like it could do so many more things than it currently is doing, which is basically just telling me that I'm stopping too quickly and accelerating too quickly. And it kind of gives you a little score. So the idea is you're supposed to try and improve your score. And I think you can. There might be some social aspects of it that I haven't turned on. But overall, it was kind of a product that I went, it's okay. It's not super impressive. So
okay,
you've been thinking about one. That's kind of my opinion on it. Maybe I'm just not getting it.
I've been thinking about one for a while. How about you? You should bring that up with you, and I can borrow it and see if I like it any better.
Sure.
Yeah. Because I've been really, really considering one. And I have an OBD2 scanner in my car that kind of works crappily these days. I don't know if it's damaged or what. It's the Kiwi Wi-Fi, but
Here's another one. So it gives you how much you're spending on gas, right? Which you're like, that would be awesome. That would be really useful. But guess what? You can't enter in how much your local gas prices are. It just sort of figures out an average somehow and just says, this is how much you're spending in gas. It's not based on any actual value that I'm spending.
Well, that's stupid.
Yeah, so it's
that
stuff like that.
Actually is kind of stupid.
Right, and again, if you go on their message boards, a lot of people complaining, and they're saying they're working on different systems, but that's why I'm saying it seems like it's not fully baked yet. Like, I don't think they kind of figured out.
So it's a cool idea. It just needs
better execution.
Yeah.
Okay. And the good news is I think they're going to be able to tweak a lot of it in software. I don't think there's a problem with the hardware. It's a software thing.
Fair enough. But yeah, I'll take a look at it. Anti-pick is the automatic, so.
Don't buy that yet.
Don't buy it.
Yet. Yeah,
patience,
I'll say yet.
Jedi.
Okay.
Wait for it to get a little bit more robust and a little better.
All right. So my... you're saying... Jeff said that his power is fluctuating.
Ooh.
So if his...
I disappear...
Yeah.
You know
what happened.
He was electrocuted.
We both have to go here, too. So wrap it up, Michael.
Okay. So my pick is... It's funny you guys were talking about it. It's Beats Music. Because I just tried it today. So I haven't had an extensive period of playing with it, but I don't think that's a big deal for a pick because you can get a free trial. So there's a 14-day free trial typically for anybody who just signs up. Now, it's supposedly extended, right? So it's more than 14 days or it's just been extended to 14 days?
No, it was 7. It's been
doubled
to 14 days.
Okay, so 14 days, that's plenty of time to try something out. However, if you are an AT&T subscriber, you are almost... definitely going to be able to get a 3-month trial. So it connects to your AT&T account. You do pay through your AT&T account when it does come online past the 90 days. But you get 90 days to try this thing out. And
cool.
It is really cool. And it worked very easily for me. It was pretty seamless. They have an online, so a web browser version, but you can also download the app, and the app is pretty cool. So what happens when you do the onboarding process? It's very neat. It says, it gives you a bunch of bubbles, and they're kind of free-floating, and you kind of have to pan around a little bit and find the bubbles that represent the different genres that you may like or you dislike. So you can do three things with those bubbles. You can tap it once, and it makes it bigger, indicating that you like it. You can tap it again and make the bubble really big, and that means that you really like it. It's one of your favorites. Or you can tap and hold a bubble and make it go away. So if you're like me, you get rid of like the country and the other weird genres that you don't listen to. So you do that, and you hit next, and then you have another set of bubbles that are based on the genres. It's a bunch of artists, and so you... They tell you to select three, but I think it's like at least three. And it's the same sort of deal. One for slightly big, two for really big, and tap and hold to make it go away. So I went through and I think I did maybe 10 different artists. And you can say, give me more artists. And it kind of repopulates the artists. And it was making some really interesting suggestions right off the bat based on what I said I liked and didn't like in the previous selection. So it was a really neat experience doing that. I have not really followed up on I think that's the Just For You feature. So I haven't really pulled up any of the stations that it created for me yet based on that, but that's because I really wanted to do the sentence thing because that looked really cool. It's kind of based on, Songza? Songza has a pretty similar thing. But I think this works quite well. It also has the highlights, like I said, genres, activities, curations. They have like a running playlist. I always struggle to find some music to get me pumped when I run, so I like finding stuff like that. So it has activity based stuff as well. So check it out. There's a 14-day free trial at the very least for you, if not a 90-day free trial. So it's worth checking out after all this Beats talk. To see what it's all about. And it's pretty interesting. I don't know if I'll stick with it because I like RDO and the social aspects that has, but who knows? We'll see. And so with that, you can find all of our picks, show notes at currently still we have communicators.com. The iOSshow.com will be the new URL. It doesn't point to anything right now because I haven't set that up yet, but it will. So the iOSshow.com, we have communicators.com. You can review the show in iTunes, tell a friend. Feedback at wehavecommunicators.com is still the email address. It will eventually be feedback at theiosshow.com. And of course, advertising handled by Backbeat Media at backbeatmedia.com. Their URL is not changing. And you can check out, I forgot what the sponsor is this month. Do you guys remember? Is it Harry's?
I don't know what your sponsor is. I can't remember. Stuff up. That's who we had last month.
I'm going to go back.
Or last time.
So it may be Harry's.
It might be Harry's. Oh, my goodness. I'm going back in my thing. I should have put this in the show notes. I've been prepared for this kind of stuff.
It's okay. You can edit this. No one will ever know.
I never edit things. Why would I edit?
Well, okay, there is that.
Seriously. Okay, I guess it is Harry's. Check out Harry's. Code WHC. Yeah, it is Harry's.
Good stuff. I was supposed to talk about it. I am enjoying the kit that I got. So I'll just... give it a thumbs up. The whole five blade thing.
Yeah, you like it? Nice and smooth?
Getting a good, yeah, very smooth.
Cool. Yeah, awesome. Harry's.com. It's a good, easy URL to remember. Code WHC will get you $5 off. So, yeah, check them out. And Jeff Gamet, he's at the Mac Observer, MacObserver.com. And at Jay Gamet on Twitter, he's /Jeff on Appler. So, GETAPPLR.com/Jeff. And Adam Christensen is at the MacCast, MacCast.com, at MacCast on Twitter. He's MacCast on Appler, and he's got the member show as well.
Yep.
So and you can find me on Twitter at Michael Johnston, getAppler/Michael, I believe, and getAppler on Twitter if you want. Don't really tweet much. Just go to the website and check it out. And with that, we will see you next time. On the iOS show.
An iPod, a phone, and an internet.
How are we going to communicate this?
The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No. Yuck. No. Yuck, yuck, no. Who wants a stylus? We have to get them and put them away.